thousands of people. The people got typhus, ourselves also, myself and my friend also got typhus. Tens of thousands. So immediately became very sick, so they tended after us. And then we got this typhus, both of us. So we're put in a hospital. That's what I told you before, in this, in the city hospital. And when this, the SS came in with this couple, which I told you before, it happened now. Then we were a little bit better, so we came back to this house. But my friend, I myself didn't know, the doctors didn't know the extent of how sick he was, and he needed a place for other people. He was mumish in a delirium. And he says to me in the morning, let's go to the station, because there's a transport going back to Czechoslovakia. So I asked him, how do you know it? Who told you? I said, Novi, how do you? He says, I'm sure. And I saw it meant him so much. I was afraid this person, he mumish, get, he has a heart attack, and a nervous breakdown. I knew that this person just speaking delirium, I mean, a form of delirium, he doesn't know what's going on. But he kept on insisting, let's go to the station. And I know this person is very, very sick, but he had no choice. So he went to the station, and he said, there's a big train going back to Czechoslovakia, come to the station. Nothing. We were staying there for a half an hour. Suddenly a train comes, but only a merchant, you know, only for a freight train. So we decided, once we're at the station, back, we don't go back, only forward. So we climb up into the freight train, and we sit there. Suddenly, before the train was to leave, so the one who's in charge of the train, the engineer, or the one who's in charge, checks every freight train, and says, we are there. And how did I look? By that time, not in good condition, I didn't want to have any more of these clothes, any more of the from the concentration camp vomit lice. So I took up by myself. I found that SS uniform. So I put on an SS uniform with a red beret, you know, and my friend also put in a black beret, SS uniforms, and that's what we were. So we were inside in this freight train, and he asked, where do you want to go? So he couldn't speak anymore. What did he say? So he said, the saying goes, one hand washes the other. He saved my life in this concentration camp, from Auschwitz on, from this death march till now. Afterwards, without me, he wouldn't be finished. Afterwards, I took care of him until I brought him back to Czechoslovakia. So this is, one hand washes the other. You do a favor to somebody, somebody will make do you the favor back. Any case, back, no more. Only, so I tell this, whoever's in charge, the manager of the station, so where do you want to go? He says, it makes a difference. Wherever the train is going, we are going. It makes a difference. Wherever we go. He says, what do you mean? Wherever you want to. So you have to go somewhere. If not, so get off. So again, he says, are you an SS? Are you SS? If not, we're calling military Americans. And he wanted to throw us off. I kept on shouting, no, you're an SS. You won't do this to us. Until they brought a couple of American soldiers, and they should throw us off the train. I said, we said, no. Wherever the train goes, we go. We leave this town, we go from Linz, we go wherever we go. So the SS saw that he can't do with, the American soldiers can't do anything with us. And by force, they didn't have the heart for it. So he says, you know, just like nowadays, how can you recognize American tourists anywhere? In Paris, in Moscow, in Tokyo. American tourists, you know, you have the camera on your shoulder. So these soldiers also had cameras. So they said, Lucia, just come down from the freight train. He wants to take this particular soldier. He wants to take pictures of us. But we are afraid that once we come down, he won't let us up. But he kept on persuading us that he only wants to take a picture of how we look. A little child, SS uniform, you know, a red beret, and emaciated us. So we went down and led us back. We went back, and the train left. Where did we come? We came to Linz. Linz is the second largest city in Austria after Vienna. So where do we go in Linz? Get off the station, the train, get off from the station. Where do we go? So again, walked on the streets until we find a beautiful house. And we saw in the back of the house a place which was like they kept on. We put all stuff. How you call it? All kind of merchandise. A storage place. A storage place. Yeah, a big storage place, like a factory. Yes, a storage, a warehouse. He went into this warehouse, find everything, all kind of, not food, but suits and shirts and shoes and hats. Anyway, we decided to make our headquarters in this warehouse, on this storage place. So we were sleeping there overnight. In the morning, the boss comes over, says, "What are you doing here?" They thought we are thieves. He says, "We're not thieves, but we don't have where to stay. We have to stay here." He says, "Oh no, you have to go." He says, "We will not go from here." And again, I always had this mindset, if somebody tries to throw me out, we are an SS, we call the Americans. So anyways, they left us there, and we walked out a few feet from the on the street, and a jeep stops, and two soldiers get out from the jeep, and they start a conversation with us. And both soldiers were from New York City, both from Meidelach. And they said, "Where are we staying?" She says, "Our headquarters is here in this warehouse, in the storage place." She says, "Immediately, just stay here. If we come back soon, in half an hour, I'll bring you food." And the boy said, these two soldiers, the two from Yiddish soldiers from New York City, most likely they are Shiva Bacharim. And they came, brought a whole jeep full with food. And every morning, 10 o'clock, every morning, 10 o'clock, on that they came and brought us food, the best food. Afterwards, they started to persuade, I was a child, says, "What with your parents?" I said, "Do I know what's with my parents? There's no way I can communicate. I can telephone, you can write, you can telegram. I just don't know." Says to me, "You know what? Come with us back to New York City." And started to persuade me, mamish, day in, day out, for hours, that they'll take care of me. He'll take care of this American Jewish soldier. He'll take care of me. He'll educate me. And then, you know, if you want to go visit, just like you go afterwards, but I should come back with him to New York. But of course, I insisted, no, I have to go first back. Then everybody say, to finish off the mices, then again, I became very sick. So we put us in the army hospital, both of us. I recuperated much faster in Linz, and this was also the headquarters for the army of the American Stab, for the Russians, for the English, in the hospital. Since I became healthier much before him, so we saw such a child, the American general said, "You know what, you come eat with us. Every time. Breakfast, lunch, every day, breakfast, lunch, and supper, you eat with us together." So it's all the generals, the American generals, the English generals, and the Russian generals, but they ate breakfast together. You can imagine what they fed them. So I was also there every time, every breakfast, every lunch, every supper, I was there in my German uniform, my red beret, and I ate with them together. I was so, can you imagine, this was many people, my own uncles. They survived the Holocaust, and afterwards, from eating, they didn't eat properly, they became sick, and this diarrhea, and posha, they died. And there's tens of thousands of people like this. So I ate with them, so whatever they served, cheese, I ate cheese, peanut butter, whatever they served, I ate from everything. And since I spoke German, but also come from Czechoslovakia, so also not Czech, Czech is a cognate language to Russian. So I understood a little bit Russian also. So I hear, as the Russian general says to the American general, he says, "Oh, just look at this little kid. He's such a glutton. Whatever he sees, he eats." That's what he said. I felt so bad. I didn't go anymore. I didn't go back. And I just ate whatever they served out in the hospital, but I could not. I was so embarrassed. But he was saying, didn't go back. Then there was a whole bunch of Russian soldiers, and Russian also lady soldiers, women soldiers. And some were wounded in the war, some were also there in this hospital. So there's a whole ward of only these women soldiers. When they saw me, they started a conversation, speaking with me. So the same thing also, try to persuade me, like a little child, he says, I want to adopt you. Come back with me to Moscow, and you be on the top of the world, you get everything. Can you imagine? I should go back to Moscow. I didn't want to go to New York. I go to Moscow. So anyways, we were there for several weeks in Linz. Then when I saw already my friend, he became already healthy. Then we decided, now it's like a time, we should go back to Czechoslovakia. Try to go back to Czechoslovakia, go home. So we went to the army, to the American army, the headquarters, and we said, we come from Czechoslovakia. Can you arrange for us transportation? We should go back to Czechoslovakia. So he said, come back Thursday. I remember it was Monday. Come back Thursday, and we'll organize the whole group, and then you go back to Czechoslovakia. Thursday we came back, this was in Linz, and a whole group of couple of truckloads of Jews from Czechoslovakia, and take them from Linz over the border, and then you go home. As we crossed the border in these trucks, the Russian soldiers stopped us, but when the American drivers said these are Jewish prisoners, so let us further. Then when we came to the first large city, so the American says, now you just take it. After the war, there was no such thing, you had to purchase a ticket. Anybody went into the train, everybody could travel free, wherever you wanted, throughout Europe. I mean, East Europe, there was the war, can go anywhere without any tickets, without any passports, you just went. So the first large city, after the border between Austria and Czechoslovakia, we entered into the train, a whole group of Jewish prisoners, and the train was packed, absolutely packed, jam-packed. In the middle, the next city, a group of the Russian police, army police, come in, he called the NKVD, GPO, who were there, and everybody had to identify, because they were looking for hidden SS, not the Germans, who were just running away. Of course, we didn't have any papers. And you know, again, I don't know how much it's known. You realize tens of thousands of Russian army took away from these prisoners before they even managed to get home. And they took them to Siberia to build up Siberia after the war. Tens of thousands of, all kinds of pretexts, excuses. So we were in this train. They asked for us of identification. I have to identify myself that I am not a SS. But what did this officer of the Russian police or the, says, you look like an SS, come down. So I was an SS, my friend was an SS, and they took a whole group, at least 75 people of Jews, and off the train into the Stab of the Russian army or the police, and they told us, we are SS, we are going to be sent to Siberia. Can you imagine? Now coming out from Auschwitz, and what's the first destination from Auschwitz? Siberia. So immediately we were imprisoned by the Russians. And we were there for a whole afternoon, locked up, without any food whatsoever. And they said, we are going to be sent to Auschwitz, to Siberia, because we are SS. In the evening, they opened up the door, and I just don't know what their position, you know, a Russian, you know, maybe Alex will tell me, the lapel was red, you know, with a flower. So it wasn't just an ordinary, it could be the general that of the whole thing, with a red lapel, a high officer, husky like this, tall. And he says, go out, you're going to Siberia. So I burst out crying, and I showed him my tattoo. And I start to shout and crying. He says, Ya Yevrei. Now, you know, Ya Yevrei means, I'm a Jew. And he pushed me away and said, you are an SS. I mean, this anti-Semite. He just wanted to find prisoners and send them to Siberia. But I kept on running after him and says, crying. He says, Ya Yevrei. And I shouted, just came out from Auschwitz. Now you send me to Siberia. But he kept on, Ya Yevrei. And I kept on mummish, crying and screaming and screeching. Yevrei, so he says to me, all right, so you go out. But the Rebbe says, I have felt this responsibility, only save myself. If you are Yevrei, all of them are Yevreis. So I kept on again shouting that all of them, all these are Yevreis. They all came with me together. That's from the concentration camps. And it just didn't want to push me away. But I felt only a person should save himself and the other ones to Siberia. Although I did not know exactly what Siberia meant, but it was something terrible. You know, in Stalin's time, Siberia. So I kept on, although Baruch Hashem, I was free already. And I managed also my colleague, my friend who helped me. But how can I leave these 75 people? I don't know, 75, 65, 85, not exactly, but a big group of people. So I kept on crying, saying, Yevrei, Yevrei, they're all Yevreis, they come to Auschwitz. But you think after maybe an hour and a half of crying, Yevrei, we are Jews, we are Jews, we are Jews, I'm Jews, and they are all Jews. So then, they let us all go. And we went to the station, and the next train, I wanted to go back to Czechoslovakia. But all the bridges were all destroyed. So we have to go make a whole circuit around. We have to go to Hungary and from Bohemia and all this. Eventually, by side, make a long story short, because I'd like you should also have time to ask questions, time to ask questions. Eventually, I came back Thursday night, could have been at 8 o'clock in the evening, came back to Košice, where I was taken from. Now, believe me, what should be such a time? The first thing, run home, see who's home. I was mamish, afraid to go home, because I thought, if I go to my house and I won't find anybody, simply I'll get either a nervous breakdown or a heart attack, and simply I can't get on the spot. I was sure I won't be able to take it. After all this suffering, and I come back, and I'm the only one at home, nobody's home, I was afraid to go home. So the joint distribution, not the joint, the American joint, set up for people running from one place to another, because nobody knew where to go, what to go. So there was a hotel, especially for these people who came back from Auschwitz. People didn't live in Košice, but from Košice they went to this city. So literally hotels. So I went to sleep over there. I was partially afraid to go home. Next morning I get up, it was Friday morning. It was around 8 o'clock in the morning, because I wanted to go. And I went home, but I was afraid to go into the house. I thought again, what I told you last, what happened last night. If I go into our house, and I won't find anybody, simply to be my absolute, I was sure it would be my end. So I was walking up and down in front of our house. Maybe somebody will come out from the house. I'll be able to inquire. If somebody's at home, I'll go up. And if not, I won't go up. So I was walking up and down myself for a long, long time, half an hour, an hour, and the super comes out. And the super, I asked the super, I told you the super's daughter, and I sent, remember, my mother sent her. Super comes out and I says, who is home? So who are you? Because I'm a Mangel, he couldn't believe. Says, your uncle and your aunt is home and your sister. I didn't want to believe it. So I said, please go upstairs and tell them to come down. I didn't want to believe they're upstairs. So they went up, the door was closed. So he says, I still didn't trust him. So the door is closed, he can't. They're sleeping, but he doesn't want to wake them up. So slowly, slowly got there, since he kept on saying, yes, your uncle, your aunt is home, and your sister is also home. So I walked slowly, slowly, maybe an hour later, I walked up and the door was open and I walk into the room. My aunt, when she sees me, as I walked into the apartment, which is our apartment, but after the war, they took our apartment, they're living in our apartment. And she sees I go in from the first room, the living room, dining room. She gives a shout to her husband, to my my uncle, what is this little Ganev do here? I looked like, because I didn't look like mamish. I mean, no hay. No. So what does this Ganev look here? And then I burst out crying. I called her by her name. She says, aunt so-and-so, I'm not a Ganev. I'm Nissen. And this, she says, are you Nissen? Says, yes. I says, no, where is my sister? She says, she's so sick. She's not here now. She had to be taken. We went for different cousins, perhaps close to a doctor, they take care of her. And Baisai, eventually, a day two later, I saw my sister, and my father and mother did not show up for a long while. Eventually, a few weeks later, we got a telegram from my mother in Prague that she's on her way. And we sent a message, she asked who is home. So we sent a telegram that we are home. But my father never came back. So if anybody can be bitter, not my grandfather came back, not my grandmother came back, so my uncles. The majority of the family didn't come back, including my own father. So basically, let me just finish up with this story. Why did my father come back? My father, if he would have lived now, if he would have lived, he would have been now the same age as the Rebbe, exactly the same age as the Rebbe. In other words, my father could have lived today. Why didn't he live? What happened to him? As I mentioned last week, he was evacuated from Auschwitz almost 2 months before we were evacuated from Auschwitz. He was taken to a lager in Germany. And when the Russians approached this lager so fast, the Germans did not want any living soul should remain as a testimony. As you know, nowadays there's a whole, Kennedy doesn't want to deny the Holocaust never happened. David Duke doesn't deny that the Holocaust never happened. This was the whole policy of the Germans. They said the thing never happened. And there's no testimony. And they wanted to kill out all the Jews. So that's why they evacuated from Auschwitz to Germany. And they thought we were able to eventually kill us all out. So as the Russians approached this place where the lager was, where my father was in this lager, they could not take them further into Germany. They took them out one night from this lager, and over 65,000 Jews were machine gunned by the Germans one night, all were killed. As the Russians were approaching, as I said, as I mentioned before in Gunskirchen, we heard the shooting. So they also heard, because one of my cousins and also three of my father's best friends survived. And there was a group of five people. So when they heard the shooting, and when they came the time they should just take them out, they didn't think that they'd be shot. Just be evacuated to a further place. So this group decided, why evacuate? Why march on to a different lager and suffer this tremendous torture further? Let's hide here in this place. And since we see already that the Allies are approaching, so within a day or two, we'll be liberated. So they dug under this barrack a big hole with their own hands, just scratching away days, and made a big hole under the barracks, under a bed, which wasn't visible. And the group of five people, always holding together, all five friends, yes, for Czechoslovakia, except one Jew from Poland. And this is the group of five people. And they hid there in this hole, in this pit. They covered themselves, and everybody would go away. And eventually, whoever it is, the Americans, the English, or the Russians, will come. They come out. This person, this Polish, the group from Czechoslovakia, these four people, were there. The fifth one was also hiding in this, but he had asthma. He couldn't breathe, so he couldn't stay covered in this pit, in this hole, because he couldn't breathe. So he walked out. So all of them, including my father, who was very close with him, says, come back, just survive a few hours, and then maybe they'll come already. I mean, the army from the Allies. He came back, and he was there for a little while, and he had this difficulty of breathing. He walked out again. And he walked out. He says he's going to go together with the rest of the Jews. Wherever they'll be evacuated, they'll also go. He walked out He was outside like 5-10 minutes. He comes back, and he bursts out crying and says to my father, Laser. My father's name was Laser. Laser, come with me. So my father says, I should go with you. You come here. He says, I cannot. So my father says, so what do you want from me? He says, you come with me. So he said, why should I go with you? She says to me, Laser, on whom are you leaving me? He felt weak. He says, with whom do you leave me? Who will take care of me? So my father was pleading with him, come back, I'll take care of you here. He says, I cannot. He says, My father kept on pleading, crying, says, "With whom do you leave me?" So my father simply could not take this cry and this pleading, and my father walked out, and his friends were holding his feet. He should not walk out, my father. My father says, "But if he needs me, I must go. This is my duty." My father walked out. The Assess saw them, because everybody was taken from the camp and taken in the forest. And that night, say between 65 and 75,000 Jews were killed. And how do I know what happened to my father? Because these other three people came back, and one is now in London, one just passed away in Tel Aviv, and the other one is still in somewhere in Israel. I don't know exactly where it's in Israel. But anyways, this only because of this chesed, which my father tried to help this person. That's why he's not here now. But Baruch Hashem, my mother, to 120 years in a good health, and my sister also the same thing, and I did survive, although my grandparents, my father, and many did not. So I think that just let's to round out this discussion. If anybody can complain to Hashem and protest to Hashem and have any complaints to Hashem, I think that I'm the one who, only because my father tried to help a person to do chesed, do this mitzvah, this greatest mitzvah, to help somebody else. That's why he should be killed. So if anybody can ask the question, where was God? Maybe God doesn't exist. I think that I can certainly ask this question. And nevertheless, let me finish off our discussion yesterday. We began, I said, in Auschwitz, people sang and exclaimed and shouted, Anima, I mean. So I can also say now, with utmost and full conviction, that although all this happened to the 6 million Jews, including my grandparents, including an innocent, fine, decent person who only gave up his life to save another Jew, that he didn't come back, my own father, and never I can say, Anima, I mean, Bamuna Shlema.